Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, you Health Renaissance people, and welcome me back from Cuba. Yes, I'm telling you, if you get a chance, we just went on our cruise about 2 weeks ago. That's why we were 2 weeks delayed in the radio show. It is a spectacular country. It just the people are warm, safe, wonderful. I've got nothing but good things to say about it. Now, today we're going to be talking about the source of disease and the source of health. That's right. And we're going to talk about the immune system. But let's look at actually what this is. What is health? You could say health is a lack of symptoms. Well, that's not really good because you got to figure how many people are running around playing golf Sunday, feel fantastic, and die of a heart attack Monday. Well, they didn't have symptoms Sunday, okay? So you can't let symptoms, particularly when 90% of the nerves that come off your spine have no pain fibers. So what is health? How do you measure it? What's the difference between gene and gene expression? What's illness? Well, let me tell you right now. Here's a definition that you can take to the bank. Health is how your body adapts to the environment. That's it. So if you're under stress, your body has to adapt to those stressors. Elevations in blood pressure, elevations in cholesterol, all of these are adaptive physiologic response. They're not diseases. So what does that mean? Does that mean that illness is taking your body beyond its adaptability? Absolutely. So what illness is literally deficiency or toxicity. That means toxicity beyond your ability to adapt, because everybody can go in there and eat the occasional McDonald's burger. If you do that, though, the bun is soaked with glyphosates, which is going to destroy your gut flora. The meat has antibiotics in there and other hormones, which are endocrine disruptors, which can damage your gut flora as well. They actually cause holes in the intestinal tract, causing increased intestinal permeability, which can cause undigested proteins to get in the immune system or the bloodstream, which is going to cause an inflammatory response and systemic inflammation. So you can handle one, maybe. I'd rather you didn't. I mean, why poison yourself when you don't want to? Or, you know, find out why. So look at this. It's gene expression. That's health. So you're expressing healthy genes to adapt. Adaptive response, okay, this is going to be bowel function, emotional adaptation. Are you sleeping through the night? Are you getting three bowel movements a day? Do you have full energy? Do you have positive attitude? Those are the measurements of health. Toxicity is beyond your adaptability. That's illness and deficiency in nutrients. So what kind of things can cause toxicity? Well, we know foods, medication, vaccinations, pollutants, even toxic emotions, dental aspects. You can have subclinical infections in the dental that can negatively affect your entire body. What about financial challenges? That's also toxic. Well, let's look at the first world epidemics. Currently, we're looking at autism at 1 in 38. Another 10 more years, we're going to have 1 in 2. 70% of every kid, that's 1 in 10, are medicated with a class 2 narcotic because they have attention deficit disorder. 1 in 4 have allergies. That's 25%. But the big thing is dementia is going to affect 100%, a 1 in 1 ratio. 1 in 2 will have cancer. 1 in 5 an autoimmune disorder. Cancer has increased about 300% in the last 32 years. Yeah, it makes you want to put on a pink ribbon and go for a walk, doesn't it? No, with the increase in cancer. So obviously, these cancer organizations are looking for the silver bullet, the magic thing that they can sell you. And that's not what cancer is. Cancer is an intelligent response by the body based on toxicity or deficiency. Even the World Health Organization says there's four diseases that are going to wipe out the economies of the world. They're called non-communicable diseases, and this is cardiovascular disease like heart attacks and strokes, cancer, respiratory diseases such as COPD or asthma, and diabetes, 95% of which is type 2. So what other things go along with this? These are non-communicable diseases. What about like fibromyalgia, bipolar disorder, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's? So what's the cause of this? I mean, obviously, our population is getting sicker. Is it genetics? Do we just have defective genetics? What about viruses, bacteria, funguses, yeast? Are we being attacked by this stuff? Is that what's causing the asthma, allergies, autoimmune conditions, chemical imbalances? Maybe the body just can't produce the right chemicals. Random malfunction, bad luck. Well, one of the things is a lot of the information that's based in health is being censored because education is dangerous. If you have somebody that even questions medication or vaccination or the standard protocol, they're being censored. Why? Because they're utilizing fear to maintain society. Fear is actually running the medical system. I mean, you never go to a doctor and the doctor says, hey, by God, Bob, your body is self-healing and self-regulating. You're so lucky to be human. No, you go to the doctor and say, ooh, let's run that blood test. It looks like cancer runs in your family. Your great uncle had a bout of it. Of course, he worked on submarines and in a coal mine. That couldn't have anything to do with it. It's probably genetic, Bob. Okay, you see the fear and psychosis? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So we have a choice. Now, vitalism versus mechanism. Now, the entire medical world is based on a mechanistic view that your body is a collection of parts. So you've got the gastroenterologist, you've got the endocrinologist, you've got the pulmonologist, you got the cardiologist, the neurologist. Now, these parts, and this is the mechanistic view, you have different specialties that are going to prescribe different medications and different therapies. However, they don't teach the gastroenterologist that food can be poisonous. And they sure as don't heck teach the neurologist that neurotransmitters are produced in the gut, that if you have a leaky gut, you're going to have altered frontal lobe function, which is bipolar disorder, stress, schizophrenia, anxiety, impulse control. So they're not going to talk about a leaky or increased intestinal permeability negatively affecting the brain. And no one's going to talk about cerebellar stimulation, how movement can actually change this little area in the back of the brain to control frontal lobe that can literally help reverse dementias and even Alzheimer's and even Parkinson's by triggering actual movement. So mechanistic view does not work. We see that in society today. So let's introduce vitalism, particularly when you're looking at, let's look at, say, the New England Journal of Medicine. What do they say about the annual physical? They say that it's actually an inverse relationship between the money spent on healthcare and wellness in the U.S., so if you go to these doctors with protocols of altering your physiology with a chemical, okay, and I had a great conversation last night with a friend of my wife's, and she says, well, I go to my annual physical, and I says, well, why do you go to it? To see if I'm okay. And I said, okay, what test do they run to see that you're okay? Well, they run a blood test. Okay, well, now a blood test is a snapshot in time. It's a good baseline, but did they ask you how many bowel movements a day you get? Are your sleep patterns interrupted? Are they asking about the pertinent questions? Now, every therapy is going to do, what does it involve? Well, could be shots, okay, shooting joints to eliminate pain. It could be surgery. That's always a favorite. But it's more than likely going to be a pharmaceutical approach. Now, the pharmaceutical approach, that's a tough one because if you've seen the TV commercials, the side effects may be go on for a few minutes. So what is the result of altering your physiology with a chemical? Well, understand that all medications create the symptom they're designed to eliminate. Cholesterol medications increased heart failure and hardening of the arteries. If you look at blood pressure medications, according to the University of Alabama, 3 blood pressure medications actually increase your risk of stroke, that it would be better if you were unmedicated at all. So we look at the side effect of muscle relaxants or muscle spasms. So obviously, this is the approach of giving a chemical to alter physiology without respecting that the body is self-healing and self-regulating is not working out real well. Brilliant, brilliant article I came across, and I recommend you read this one. It's fairly lengthy. It's 140 pages, but the title is The Questionable Contribution of Medical Measures to the Decline of Mortality in the United States in the 20th Century. So if that's the title of the article, you can imagine that the article is full of a bunch of good stuff. Okay, so just take your time. And it's interesting because this author, listen to the start of this. Introducing a medical heresy. The modern heresy that medical care, as it's traditionally conceived, is generally unrelated to the improvements in health of populations, is still dismissed as unthinkable in much the same way as so-called heresies of former times. History is replete with examples of how, understandably, self-interested individuals and groups denounce popular customs and belief, which appear to threaten their own domains of practice, thereby rendering them heresies. You can see this in the news. You can see this on Facebook, on YouTube. What do they call people that are questioning certain medical procedures? You're an anti-vaxxer. Oh, do you want the diseases to come back? You are evil. See, all you're doing is questioning a medical procedure. But with that label, okay, you are labeled an anti-vaxxer. You are labeled a pro-disease person. And it's interesting because this article goes on to state that, sure enough, infectious diseases have declined. However, heart disease, cancer, stroke have all increased. So does that mean that the medical procedures that we're doing today or our environment, we're seeing less infectious diseases? Now, could that be from vaccines? Possibly. Could it be from medications? Possibly. Could it be from refrigeration or fresh water or road systems or healthier diet? This article goes on to state that of all the medical interventions, for the decline in mortality, all the medical interventions are responsible for about 3.5%. That means 96.5% of the health of the population is not from the medical interventions, but actually from a healthier environment that we're in. The problem is a lot of the interventions, the medical approaches, are leading to heart disease, cancers, and strokes. So I'm going to bring up a couple of statistics that show that tuberculosis, typhoid, scarlet fever, and measles all fell with the same rapid growth in the same time frame. However, a lot of the medications or vaccines used to control these were introduced far beyond the decline, when the diseases were declined at least over 90%. In fact, this article goes on to say, unlikely assumption that all of this decline is attributed to the intervention is estimated that at most 3.5% of the total decline in mortality since 1900 could be ascribed to medical measures introduced for the diseases considered here. Now, I've got this article because typically, since it's a fear-based, ignorant society where people are going to lash out, and the media is controlled because America no longer has a free media. This is why they're censoring Facebook, censoring Pinterest, and soon to be censoring YouTube for anybody that has a dissenting view. Yes, it's not Nazis. This is America. So we look at this, and if you have a dissenting view, people will typically say, well, what about polio? What about measles? You want these diseases coming back? So I actually have a list of what the diseases were like before vaccinations. Okay, let's look at polio, 1955. You had a fatality of about 1 in 100,000. That means that 99.999% of the population was completely unaffected. Let's look at measles before the vaccine. You had 1 in 500,000, okay, fatality. That means 99.99998% of the population was completely unharmed. And by the way, if you actually caught measles, because we did this last week, or 2 weeks ago, about the benefits of catching measles, you have less cancer rates, asthma and allergy rates, so there's benefits from catching these wild diseases. What about tetanus? You had a 1 in 200,000 chance of having some type of harm. That means 99.99995% of the population had no problem. Okay, you're not going to hear that on the evening news. I like this article here, and this was Dr. McCohen. The decline in mortality in the second half of the 19th century was due wholly to reduction of deaths from infectious diseases, and there was no evidence of a decline in other causes. Examination of the diseases which contributed to the decline suggests that the main influences were a rising standard of living, most significant was a better diet, improved hygiene, and favorable trends in relationship between some microorganisms and the human host. Therapy made no contributions, and the effect of immunizations was restricted to smallpox, which accounted for 1/20th of the reduction of the death rate. So, wow, that's crazy. And I encourage you to read this book. And this book is, again, a big book. You can get it online by McCohen. It was written in 1976. The title is The Role of Medicine, Dream, Mirage, or Nemesis. I mean, just, oh, God, doesn't that title give you goosebumps? This is exciting. And under the chapter Nemesis, I want to read this part, because remember, I think he's British. A third suggestion should be considered, that the role of medicine is essentially sinister. It should not surprise us, for it has been made before, but in terms so benign that the offense of what was said was quite removed by the manner of saying it. People, including medical people, were more amused than provoked when Shaw described medical service as a murderous absurdity and referred to physicians, among other things, as a credulous impostor, petulant scientific concoction, and parasite on disease. Man, don't you like the way the British talk? They utilize English the way we should. I mean, he's really calling out that the symptom drug therapy, and this was back in 1976 when we still had liability for certain vaccine companies, that Hippocrates was right. First, do no harm. And so what are we looking at? We're looking at medical care as typically the control of symptoms with medications. Science would be nice to find out what the symptoms are. But here, health is really the true expression of what you're faced with. So we really are at a paradigm shift. Do you believe that the doctor is smarter than your physiology? Or do you believe, and their interventions are going to give you long life or health? Or do you believe that your body is self-healing, self-regulating, and you're designed to live on this planet? Well, let's look at the immune system. Now, we can do a mechanistic view of the immune system. We can talk about the parts, the macrophages, lymphocytes, B cells, antibodies, stem cells. Okay, now let's look at the head immunologist in the world, okay? I've got a couple of quotes from these guys. Let's go to Stanford. Gary Fathom, professor of immunology, rheumatology. I mean, brilliant guy. But this guy is also brilliant in understanding that what we don't know, we don't know, okay? If a patient were to ask me how my immune system is doing today, I would have no idea to answer that, and I'm an immunologist. None of us can answer that. Right now, we're still doing the same test he did when he was a medical student in the late 60s. We can perturb the immune system in all ways, measure levels of hundreds or even thousands of different things in response to that, and figure out which ones go up or down, which states of health or non-health. Anything that might affect the system, vaccine, disease, drug, can tell you something. Isn't that something? What about Mark Davis, chair of Stanford's University School of Medicine? There's an awful lot of moving parts in the immune system, and we don't know what the vast majority of them do or should be doing. We can't even be sure how to tell when the immune system is not working right, let alone why not, because we don't have good metrics of what a healthy immune system looks like. Isn't that telling? Think of that. So we're working with an immune system that we're not really sure of how it works. So that vitalistic concept, now we can perturb it with 72 doses of 17 different vaccines like we're forcing on our children. But where does the criteria, where does the risk-benefit ratio come in? Well, listen to this. Up to 45% of your genetic information in your DNA is viral. That's right. Viruses are vital for our ecosystem. They're vital for our body. In fact, we have an ecosystem on our skin and in our gut. So where do we get this germ phobia? Well, the philosophy of modern medicine and the germ theory. See, Koch, and this is Koch's postulates, back when they first discovered microscopes, he would find a disease, and he would grow that disease in an animal, in a culture. And so imagine if you had like five animals with tuberculosis, and you found the same bacteria in all five. You would grow it in a petri dish, put it in a healthy host, cause the same disease, and then regrow it and compare the two bacterium. This is called Koch's postulate, the definitive diagnosis if the bug has been causing it. Now, that's the germ theory. However, The Lancet did an article called The Limitations of the Germ Theory. And they say, quote, the germ theory has become dogma because it neglects many of the other factors that have a part to play in deciding whether the host germ environment complex lead to infection. What does the British Medical Journal say? They say the biomedical model of illness, which has dominated healthcare for the past century, cannot fully explain the forms of many illnesses. And so they're saying the germ theory doesn't really work. Theobald Smith, and we're talking back in the early 1900s, developed the germ theory equation. And it's the virulence of pathogens times the number of pathogens times the opening size divided by the resistance of host. So really, it's not the germs that are causing the disease. And I'm talking even Ebola. It has to do with the human resistance, the immune system. How does the immune system work? Ask the greatest immunologist on the planet, and they don't know. Okay, but looking at the vitalistic aspect, what type of things can negatively or positively affect the immune system? Well, we're talking our environmental adaptation. Okay, this means your perception of the environment is going to change your immune system response. Does that mean that the nervous system, which controls and coordinates every function of the body, should be primary in looking at this? Absolutely. And you've got a nervous system. One part keeps you alive under stress. That's the sympathetics. The other part regenerates tissue. That's the parasympathetics. So the body has this fight or flight response or rest and digest. And when we look at autonomic dysfunction in motor of chronic critical illness, now this was the annual update of intensive care, 2013, they say regardless of the etiology, there's always an autonomic function underneath of every chronic illness or disease. Wow, so that makes sense. So when we're looking that our population is sicker, our kids are getting more autoimmune diseases, more neurologic diseases, more pathology. We're vaccinating and drugging them more, and we're feeding them toxic food. Could that be a contributing factor, or could that be a contributing factor? I know, duh. Okay, so we know that the nervous system is directly connected to the immune system. Let's look at the Journal of Comprehensive Physiology, 2014. Further understanding of the regulatory mechanisms linking the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system and the immune system is critical for understanding relationships between chronic disease development and immune system changes. Wow, so that makes sense. So it's not these diseases attacking us. It's the physical, chemical, and emotional stressors that we have. I mean, let's just look at the body's first response. Okay, let's say fever. Okay. Now, what do most people say? Oh my gosh, at the first sign of fever, take a Tylenol. Except Tylenol depletes glutathione, weakening your body's immune system response and preparing your brain for more damage. Now, every 1 degree increase in temperature, the speed of your immune system doubles. Viruses, funguses, and bacteria die at a higher temperature. So a fever is actually beneficial. What does mucus do? It walls off invaders. I mean, you look at this, and you've got a number of components of the immune system. The skin, the gastric acid, saliva, tears, intestinal bacteria. I mean, all of this stuff. We have a Th1 and Th2, or a normal long-term response mitigated by healthy gut flora. We have an acute inflammatory response, or Th2, caused by vaccines and acute stressors. So what do we have? We have a population inundated with acute Th2 responses. Tonight, we're going to go over certain toxicology. Here's one out of the Journal of Toxicology, 2007. Quote, nonlinear dose response of aluminum hydroxide adjuvant particles, selective low-dose neurotoxicity. Okay, now that's the title of the article. I know. Can you imagine sitting around reading that and thinking, damn, I want to get through that article. That's going to be fun. Okay, well, it was frightening. What they found was that the classic chemistry says that the dose makes the poison. The problem is that's not what happens in the body. If you get a small amount of toxic substances, such as from aluminum from a vaccine, your body has these cells called macrophages, which wall it off and can carry it around throughout the body. If there's a large dose of aluminum, the macrophages know to wall it off and get it out. But these macrophages can actually funnel this throughout the body. So that is something that we have to change. Okay, we literally have to change that response or reduce the number of neurotoxins that we're injecting into kids. Now, we're going to go through and talk a lot about immune system cells or responses. But again, these are just the parts. If you look at the parts as a mechanistic system, you're going to look at the antibody response. But then we have patients with a congenital anomaly called agamma globulinemia, and they recover from infections just as fast as anyone else without the ability to produce antibodies. So even antibody science is wrong. You have to look at what your body is. If you develop a fever, if you develop a cough, if you develop high blood pressure, if you develop elevations in cholesterol, these are not diseases. These are adaptive responses to a toxic, deficient environment. To not even pay attention to the stressors that are causing that, and you just control the symptoms with a medication, that comes at a dear price of people's lives. We can no longer go for the medical system that has a symptom drug therapy. We need to start appreciating that the body is self-healing and self-regulating. That means self-healing and self-regulating. That means if that blood pressure goes up, it's because of dehydration or chronic stress. That's an adaptive immune system response. If you have decreased blood supply to the gut, if you have chronic stressors, you're going to have inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. So all of those conditions, if you're dealing with the symptoms with antibiotics and steroids and not dealing with the underlying stressors, you will not live long. That therapy has been proven to not add to the length or quality of life. I know it seems harsh. But we have to get this information out there. Go to Extreme Health Academy, okay, and we have a number of different speakers on there. This month is going to be Skin Month, and that's where we're talking about immune systems today. Next, we have an event coming up in November in Puerto Vallarta. I'm going to have information on that tonight. But just keep getting educated. If you're a doctor, if you're a healthcare professional, get out there, get educated, spread this information. Do not follow the standard protocols. Break away from the standard protocols. Be a real doctor. Look at patients. Look at what they need. Give them what they need. Deal effectively with their physical, chemical, and emotional stress. This is Dr. John Bergman. God bless you, and I love you. This is the voice of reason.